Welcome to an SDM-focused episode of Software on Wild. We figured out yesterday while we were recording a podcast on Docker that we really haven't spent any time on what someone calls traditional SDN recently. So let's fix that. Today, we'll talk about an exciting thing that I'm not even trying to call Patch Panel. No, I just did it. Anyway, it's not a patch panel. It's something way cooler than that. It's called Big Chain. And now you know that it's coming from Big Switch Networks. And with me are Sandeep Shah and Andy Shaw from Big Switch Networks. I don't think either one of you have been on my podcast before, so I don't know how familiar my listeners are with you. Could you tell people a little bit about what you're doing, what your history is, how you ended up being at Big Switch Network, and what you're doing there?
Sure. This is Andy. I've been at Big Switch for a few years, building SDN applications. I'm an engineering manager here, working with Sandeep on Big Monitoring Fabric and Big Monitoring Fabric Inline, which we also call Big Chain. Before joining Big Switch, I was at VMware for about 10 years working on vSphere. I managed some of the main vSphere teams in ESX as well as vCenter, including the original ESX networking team, which created the virtual switch. And we actually have a bunch of the VMware networking folks here with us at Big Switch as well.
So you're responsible for that thing that doesn't do STP.
We can have another conversation about that later, Ivan.
Yeah. Hey, Ivan. This is Sandeep Shah. I've been working at Big Switch for 3.5 years, and previously I was at Juniper Networks for 8 years. I have approximately 15 plus years of experience in the networking industry at Big Switch. I'm the architect and implementer of the Monitoring Fabric application as well as the Big Chain application.
Okay, so everything you guys do has Big in the name, right?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
There's the Big Cloud Fabric, which is the data center fabric. And then I know that a few years back, you had the Big Tap, which was the tap aggregation network.
Yes, absolutely. And we call that Big Monitoring Fabric today.
Okay. And now you have Big Chain. How does that fit into the bigger picture?
So, Ivan, what's happening is with the increase in cyber attacks, like modern IT organizations are faced with the challenging task of how to secure their enterprise network. So typical design involves they divide their network into two zones, trusted zones and untrusted zone. Untrusted zone is facing the internet, and trusted zone is their own enterprise network. Between these zones, they place a lot of security tools, like specialized security tools like firewall, IPSs, DDoS detection, which can mitigate different types of threats. And these threats are increasing, so they are deploying more and more tools in their DMZ layer. Traditionally, there have been two approaches of deploying these multiple tools. So one simple approach is like you daisy chain them, daisy chain each of the tools and between your production boxes in the trusted and untrusted zone. And all the traffic goes through all the tools all the time in both the directions.
So when you say daisy chain, you actually mean physically connect them together with cables.
Yeah, physically connect one after another in a north-south direction. That's what I meant by daisy chain. And the problem with that approach is that all the traffic goes through all the tools at all the times. These tools are specialized tools. Some of the tools are interested only in some subset of traffic. But in daisy chain approach, you don't have a choice. You have to go through all the tools. The traffic goes through all the tools. And even if a tool is not interested, it will bypass the traffic, but it will get the traffic. The other problem is a single point of failure. If one of the tool fails, you lose network connectivity. So these are the problems with the daisy chain approach. Some of the folks, some of the IT organization, what they have done is they connect these multiple tools to their WAN-facing router, and they configure complex PBRs or policy-based routing flows on that WAN-facing router. The problem with that approach is that these PBS can get very complex, and it interferes with your routing. So anytime you have to add a tool, you have to go and change your PBRs. You have to change your routing and the forwarding logic on the production routers. Every time a security team wants to add any, they see new threat, you have to file a ticket with networking team and then resolve. So there's a lot of integration required between the security and the networking team. If you want to take any tool for maintenance or you want to upgrade the tool, again, you have to kind of work with the networking team, schedule a downtime, do whatever you required. So these are the problems with these approaches that people have been deploying multiple tools in the DMZ.
Okay. Are you telling me that there are actually people who would use PBR to direct traffic through these tools?
Yes, yes. People do that. So what they do is on the production routers, they connect these tools and then they use PBRs. Because as I said, not all the tools want all the traffic. Like for example, if you are doing a DDoS for only certain set of your application server. So you want, okay, for these subnet of traffic, I want to send it to DDoS detection and mitigation tool, not everything. So some people configure these complex PBRs today in their IT organization, but it's not a scalable approach because it is difficult whenever you have to add new tools or you have to do any changes in your security network, like the security tools, you have to always reconfigure your production router.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I've seen many crazy things, but I've never heard about something as stupid as that.
Yeah, that's where BigChain comes into picture. BigChain is the switch or a set of switches which will sit between these production boxes, and you connect these tools directly to the switches. These tools are kind of bump-in-the-wire tools which are connected directly to these switches. And what we do is we manage what traffic goes through these switches using the SDN controller. So it's a very simple way of configuring, okay, what tools get what traffic. So we can do extensive filtering because this switch has the capabilities of doing a lot of filtering. We can say, okay, if it is this subnet of traffic, give it to a DDoS. Or if it is SSL, give it to SSL decryption devices. Or if it is web traffic, give it to WAF and so on. So it gives you capabilities of filtering. Also, you can say you don't have to apply the tools in both the directions. If the traffic is generated from your trusted zone, you may want to skip your firewall going to the untrusted zone because it's your own traffic. So it gives you the ability to kind of optimize these tools, what traffic goes to the tool, because these tools are really expensive. In terms of speeds and feeds, they are kind of one generation behind the production ports. So production ports are typically 10 gig, 40 gig. And so on. In university environment, they also have 100 gig. But for tools, they are typically one generation behind because they are software, FPGA based. They have to do a lot of deep packet inspection, mitigation, and so on. So it's typically 1 gig, 10 gig tool. To handle the bandwidth mismatch, to do the filtering, this is where a product like BigChain helps.
To oversimplify what you're doing, you configure the rules of what traffic should go through what tool. You do that in an SDN application, which then transforms that into a set of, let's say, OpenFlow entries and push them as PBR rules to the switch.
Yes, yes. But in addition to that, that is one aspect of implementing the forwarding logic and which we go and then program the Broadcom chips so that these tools get the relevant traffic. That's one aspect of it. The other thing is we also do health check of these tools. Maybe they are physically up, the interfaces are up, but the software has crashed. So we have to do custom health check of these tools to see whether they are live or not.
And you do that health check from the controller, I'm guessing.
What we do is from the controller, we configure the switch to do the health check. Actually, the health check is done by the switch. So we can operate in the headless mode also. So if in case the switch loses the connection to the controller, these switches are connected to the SDN controller on the management network. And sometimes there could be problems in the management network and you may lose connectivity between the switches and the controller. So what we do is we program the switches. We tell them, hey, this is the intent. This is how you do the health check. And once it is set up, the periodic health checks are done by the switches. And if they see any problem, if there's a miss, if they don't see the heartbeat coming back from these tools, these are all custom heartbeats, then they can either notify to the controller or they can take some local actions.
Now, Sandeep, before we move down this rabbit trail, which I totally enjoy, Bob McCouch have joined us. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Hey, Bob. Hello. Greetings.
You have been on this podcast for an enormous amount of time, right?
It's been quite a while, I think. Apparently so long that I hadn't upgraded Skype to the latest version yet.
Oh, yeah. Skype acts different way every time I start it. I don't want to know.
So, yes, I wanted to make a nice dramatic entry, so I figured I would show up late.
So Sandeep, what you just told me is that you're effectively implemented the probing mechanism, the health check mechanism in the switch. And it has to be done in the CPU, right? Because these health checks are sometimes pretty complex.
Yeah. So we do it in the switch CPU. To give you a high-level picture, so the way it works is these switches are open networking switches. And what we do is for this application, we run BigChain switch operating system on these switches. And they are all managed through this SDN controller, which is also running the BigChain application. So when user configures these tools, they say that, hey, these are my set of tools, and there's a way to configure what kind of heartbeat, custom heartbeat that you want to do or probing you want to do through these tools. So user configures everything on the single pane of glass on the SDN controller. We have a very slick GUI, or they can go on the CLI, or we also have not bound RESTful APIs. So user will configure his intent over there, and then controller will go and program the switches. And we try to do everything on the switch because this is an inline device. We have to be able to be operate in the headless mode. We have to be hitless in the headless mode. So then we tell switches, okay, this is how you do the heartbeat. Switches will periodically go. And you can also set the period, what timeout you want, and on and so on and so forth. And there are some default values. So these switches are capable of doing probing on those tool-facing ports. So they'll send the custom packets. And your send and receive packets can be different. It doesn't have to be same. So
you are effectively writing a Python script, let's say, which generates a packet and then receives some other packet and checks whether the tool is alive based on that.
Yes. And also not just a script to check whether the tool is alive, but you also have to take actions on that. So let's say if the tool is not alive. So we do support fail open, fail close modes. What I mean is your choice, if the tool is down and you are deployed in a HA setup, you have right-hand side of network and left-hand side of network. And let's say if the tool is really important, it's a firewall. And if you think if the firewall is down, you want to shut down your right-hand side of network, then we bring down the production ports. We also do actions based on the results of these health checks.
Okay, you just opened a whole new can of worms.
Okay.
All of a sudden, the HA made a dramatic entry.
The point I was trying to make is, we do health checks and we do also perform actions on the health checks, the results of health checks.
Okay, now let's focus on the HA guy.
Sure. Maybe I should have brought it up later. Since this is an inline device, you have to make sure, what if this big chain switch, we have to cover a lot of failure scenarios. So some of the failure scenarios could be tool interface, like interface to the tools, the security tools are going down. The tool itself went down, or one end of the production port went down, but not the other end. Or the big chain switch went down, or you lose connectivity from the switch to the controller, there might be some problems in the management network. So there are a whole bunch of failure scenarios. And being an inline device, we have to handle all these scenarios. And this is why our customers, like a lot of our customers, love our product, because we have covered all the failure scenarios that can be associated with this device by deploying this device. That's the overall high level of HA, how we are handling all the failure scenarios.
Okay, so for HA, you need two switches, right?
Yeah, typically the way our customers deploy is they put two switches. They can, and from the production ports, they can lag. They lag to these two switches. And from these two switches, can be connected to a common tool or two instances of a tool. Depends on, because some of these tools, as I said, are really expensive. And some of the customers don't want to buy two set of tools. So they can use a common tool sitting in between these two switches. And you can make these tools optional so that if the tool goes down, just bypass the tool. Don't even send the traffic to these tools. That's what I meant by fail open and fail close mode.
Okay, but let's make the simplest possible scenario. I just have a pair of firewalls that now I connect to the pair of switches.
Yes.
These two firewalls have to have state synchronized. So they need another link between them, right?
Yes. So what happens is, in case of these firewalls where they are running in active-active mode or active standby mode. So let's talk of active-active mode. They need to have a state synchronized, but we also support symmetric hashing of the traffic. So we make sure that if the traffic comes in on, it is coming from the north direction or from the south direction, it will end up, for a given flow, it will end up on one instance of firewall. So we do advanced load balancing using the Broadcom Trident 2 chipsets.
Yeah, but that only works if the device doesn't change the content, like doing net or changing port numbers, right?
Yeah, so you have a choice. You can just do symmetric load balancing just based on IP address, or you can have IP address plus ports, depending on how you want to define your symmetric load balancing. So you have a choice.
Okay, so now we have these two firewalls, and let's say they are active-active. They have this other link between them. Now, if one of them fails, let's say that I don't want to bypass the firewall. I want the firewall to be active. So the firewall fails. What do you do?
Yeah, so firewall fails. One thing is either the interface on that firewall may go down, or interface are still up, but the software has just crashed. So there are two scenarios. Let's talk about both these scenarios. If the interface has gone down, we know, okay, this service was mandatory and its interface has gone down. We bring down the production ports.
Production ports are what?
Production ports are the ports which are facing your routers, the production boxes, like the routers in the trusted zone as well as the untrusted zone. You have the trusted zone, which is your own network. Then you have DMZ, and then you have untrusted zone. So this big chain device and big chain switches and the tools are sitting in the DMZ layer. So these are sitting between the two production ports, like your WAN-facing router as well as your internal network router. It sits between these two, the router ports. Otherwise, wherever you would have daisy chain all these tools, we put the big chain switch over there. The same approach.
Essentially, Van, if you have a failure of a key service, what happens is that we shut down the entire side and shift the traffic over to the other side.
Yes.
So you're shutting down all the external ports. I would call them external. You call them production.
Yes. Production, external ports.
You take the switch offline.
Yes, we basically take the switch offline. We take that particular chain offline. So a switch can have multiple chains. So we had to take that chain offline because the other chain may not be using firewall, but may be only doing a different set of tools, correct? And those tools might be up. We take basically the entire chain offline.
You can configure multiple chains per physical switch, which makes perfect sense.
Yes.
And every chain would have two external connections and then whatever tools in between. And if one of the mandatory tools fails, you shut down the external ports for the whole chain.
Yes.
And if I understood you correctly before, you have these two switches and the external ports appear as a port channel to the outside world.
Yes.
So you shut down the external ports, and it looks like one of the interfaces of a port channel went down.
Yes. So it's like one of the interfaces of the lag went down, so your traffic will go to the uplink of that lag, the interface which is up.
Now that you mentioned lag, are you running LACP with the external world, or is it static port channel?
So remember, this is layer one bump in the wire. We are just passed through. So if we see LACP packet, we just send it to the other end of the external port. So the LACP is running not between the big chain switch and the external router, but it is actually running between the external ports itself.
Sneaky.
So we don't want to participate in protocols. We are just passed through layer one bump in the wire device.
Now that's really sneaky. Are you also passing spanning tree and CDP packets across?
Yes. Any layer 2 control protocols, we just pass through them. We don't participate. We don't send it through the tools, those control protocol packets.
That's really cool.
And the best part is we don't have to do any layer 2 learning. We are not doing any of those things. So it's a very simple solution, just layer 1 bump in the wire.
Yeah, and if there is a forwarding loop, someone outside will notice that and shut down your ports.
Yes.
Cool. By the way, can you use more than two switches? Can I have 4 switches, or would I treat that as 2 independent sets of 2 switches?
No, you can have as many switches. In fact, some of our customers have like 8 switches because they have a lot of chains in some of their sites. And the best part of this architecture is you can horizontally scale and you can go across multiple sites and you can manage everything through the same single pane of glass using that SDN controller. So it's a horizontally scalable architecture.
And in your case, the SDN controller is really just a configuration entity, right?
Yeah, it's mostly configuration and all the operational stacks. It has a very slick GUI on it, so you can drag and drop things. You can configure these filters. We support layer 2, layer 3, layer 4 level. Like you can match or up to, you can go up to 128 bytes within the packet. So it supports deep packet matching. So you can say, hey, only this SSL type V2, if it is V2 or V3, send it to this tool. Or so you can go deeper than layer 4 and send it to tools. So we do support advanced filtering. And all the algorithms that create these complex flows, they actually run on the controller and it is programmed to the switch. And also on the switch, controller says, hey, if in the event of failure, and if you don't have connectivity to me, if you are in the headless mode, and if in the event of failure, what to do? So it also programs the switches with those things.
Now you totally confused me. I thought I understood how it works.
Okay. So it's a configuration entity. User will configure his intent.
And then this intent is pushed down as flow rules into the switches.
Yes. So this intent needs to be converted into the forwarding logic, correct? Which are these flow rules. So that is done by the controller. That's one part. And the second part is, okay, what do you do when things fail? Like, for example, health check related and other failure handling, what do you do? So you have to program the switches with the intent of how do you handle the failures also. So there are two things that controller does. It programs the forwarding logic and the failure handling part of it.
So far, the controller is a non-real-time configuration entity.
Yes.
And then you mentioned the deep packet inspection down to 128 bits. Who is doing that?
That is done by switch. So all the traffic goes only on the data path onto the switch at line rate. The traffic does not come to the controller. Everything that is done on the switch, and on we use the Broadcom Trident 2 Plus families of ASIC, and as well as the Tomahawk family of ASIC for 100 gig and all. That's all done in the switch hardware.
So the controller is not involved in data plane or flow setup at all?
It is not involved in the data plane at all. Just configures these flow matches and the actions that needs to be taken. That's it. After that, controller is not involved in the data traffic.
Cool.
From a standpoint of bringing traffic into the chain, is there one, I hope I'm using the right term here, one production port on the switch per chain?
Two production ports. So one will be north-facing port and one will be the south-facing. So Bob, let's step back, correct? So, So you have this internal network that you need to secure, and you have the WAN-facing routers, which are facing the WAN. You want to introspect all the traffic that comes from the internet, which goes to your internal network. Now, for that, what people have done is they typically like daisy chain, a lot of security tools. Now, different threats based on the different types of threats. You have different security tools, some specialized tools that people use, and they daisy chain it. So, for example, one of the daisy chain configuration could be first do SSL decryption, then let it go through DDoS, then let it go through IPS, and then again do some firewall and go through SSL encryption again. So that could be a chain of services that you will apply on that packet or set of packet. You would place these tools in DMZ, which is connecting your trusted zone on the south end and untrusted zone on the north end. So you have these two ports. So for every chain, you have two production ports or external ports, as Ivan calls it, and a set of tool ports. The tool ports could be 2, 4, 6, 8, whatever. I mean, depending on number of tools that you want to use, you can chain 5, 6 tools. However many tools you want, we support that.
And you're basically going to have an in and an out port for each tool, right?
Yeah, in and out port for each tool. And also for production ports, you say, these are my two production ports. That's a typical setup of a particular chain. And then you can have multiple of these chains on the switches.
Okay, so when we were talking about, for instance, load distribution, you said you're acting just as a bump in the wire. So if you're doing LACP or a spanning tree or even a layer 3 routing protocol, that's really passing through. So really what ends up making your traffic distribution decision is the whatever technique is established between the production side device and the first tool. Would that be correct?
So way we program the forwarding logic is, so on the tool, you will say, hey, I'm interested in this subset of traffic. So when you configure the tool, by default, you get all the traffic. Or you can say, I'm only interested in some set of traffic, and I'm interested in this traffic only in one direction and not in the other direction. These are all the options you can give when you configure a tool ports. So based on the configuration of that tool, then you configure chain where you say, hey, in this chain, I want these tools in this sequence.
And I assume you can share one tool through multiple chains. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. We can share because these tools are dual ports are so expensive. Typically, you would want to share them across multiple chains.
Right.
So you can share the same port of a tool in multiple chains.
Yes.
But then you have to correlate the traffic going into the tool with the traffic coming out of the tool.
Yes. So what we do is we tag the traffic. Anytime our traffic comes in on an external port, we need to know which external port it came on. So different chains have different tags on it, unique tags on it. And when the packet comes back from the tool, we know it belongs to this chain. And so we know what to do with the traffic.
How are you tagging it such that the tag survives going through the tool?
So we are using VLAN tags.
Right? Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was the only viable answer.
So our customers really use this sharing of tools feature because the number of ports are pretty limited on these tools.
I mean, essentially, they would have had to buy a separate tool for each chain beforehand. And with Big Chain, we give the ability to share between chains.
Yeah. So all these things are not possible if you deploy it in a daisy chain manner, correct? Like you have to have now so many tool ports and so on. You cannot share.
And you're taking the logic from the Big Tap packet brokering function to be able to do all of that fine-grained slicing and dicing where you can do that deep packet inspection and make decisions based on bits deep inside the packet. Is that correct?
Actually, yeah, it's kind of independent because it's just, you just say, hey, it's a user configuration which gets translated into these flows. The complexity comes into picture when you have like these different set of tools. Like tool one says, I'm interested in send me only SSL V2 traffic. Two will say, I want all the traffic. Tool three can say, I want only for this subnet, I want the traffic. And we also support span. So on the chain, you can span the traffic coming, ACL-based span coming on either trusted or untrusted zone. So when you have all these combination going on in one chain, you have to make sure your flows are programmed properly, correct? So that the tool gets all the relevant traffic. It does not miss any traffic which it was supposed to get, but it should not get any extra traffic which it was not supposed to get. So that is where the complexity comes. And that's all hidden from the user. User just says his intent, and we make sure we get the functionality right.
So when you don't get the functionality right, then what does one do from a troubleshooting standpoint? Is there logic tracing tools you can use to determine what path a specific packet actually took? You know, if let's say I suspect that something didn't flow the right way, or I'm just not sure why certain service did or did not get invoked when I thought my policies indicated that it should. What kind of diagnostic tools do I have to evaluate what's actually going on?
Sure. You can look at all the flows at the controller, all the flows that are programmed at the controller, or you can also go down to the switch and look at the flows. You can also see the stats on the tool ports to see we give byte stats, packet rate, byte rate, all those interface stats that you can look at per tool, per chain stats. So we have those things. And also you can send the traffic and see what all tools that it went through. So we have these different troubleshooting tools where you can enable to make sure, hey, tool is getting what it is supposed to get.
So you can actually insert traffic from the controller and see if it comes out at the other end.
What we do is right now, so this is what we are working on right now to create like a test path or test packet kind of thing where we can insert it from the controller and then it comes out on the other end. It's not there yet, but we are working on it. But for now, folks are using mainly the interface stats, packet and byte stats to make sure that the relevant tools are getting relevant traffic.
What's the average number of tools you're seeing in chains that your customers are deploying? Is this being used to build extremely complex chains or simply to ease the management of simpler service chains?
So we have seen both. At an average, we are seeing like 3 tools per chain in our DMZ deployments. This is at various customer sites. So we have like Energy Corporation, or we have Automaker, financials, software vendors, we have universities, healthcare as our customers. So at an average across all these customers, we are seeing, I would say, 3 tools per chain.
And how many chains per customer?
So that varies a lot. We have customers with multi-site deployments, and on each switch, they have like up to 14, 15 chains, multiple switches per site and multi-site. That's few of our customers. Some of our customers are using it for a smaller deployment. The best part is, even if you're multi-site, you're still managing it through one single pane of glass, correct? Because as long as you have the management connectivity between the switches and the controller, you can use one single pane of glass to manage the whole thing.
Right, because your controller is never in your data path, right?
Yeah, controller is never in the data path. That's the best part.
And also, if the controller fails, you don't need it until you have to reconfigure the whole thing, right?
Yes, you don't. So in fact, at one of our customers, the controllers, the server guy, so they were running controller in a VM, and the server guy went and decommissioned those VMs. And the security guy he panicked. He's like, hey, my controller is gone. He brought it back up, replayed the config. What we do is we check with the switch, hey, what's your current state and what is the new state? And we do a delta computation of the forwarding logic. If there is no delta, we don't push any state to the switch. So there was no packet loss in that case. When he brought the VMs up and replayed his config, there was absolutely zero packet loss. And he was pretty happy about that. We do support headless mode.
One thing that we forgot to mention at the very beginning, you are running this on white box switches, right?
Yeah, open networking switches.
Yeah, so the switches could have anywhere from a few ports to like 100 ports or so, right?
So typically, most of the switches that we support look like a very standard top-of-rack switch with typically 48 10 gig ports, and 4 to 6 40 gig is a pretty standard switch, but we also support a 40 gig switch as well as 100 gig switches. You know, one of the nice features of the architecture and design that we've built is that the hardware vendors come out with the switches, and depending upon their roadmap and when they're ready to come out with the switches, we simply have to support that new switch when it comes in, and we just get the new features and the new speeds that come with the switches. One more thing is that another kind of advantage of this is that there's a lot of ports on these switches because they were intended as normal networking switches. So there's a standard number of ports on them. We find that people like that because there's probably more ports on the switches than they could use, and a lot more than, you know, some other options that they might be considering.
And one other thing we also forgot to mention at the very beginning. Now I think everyone should deduce the answer, but let's ask the question anyway. Is it okay if I have a single copy of the controller, or would you recommend that I run controllers in a cluster?
We typically recommend controller in the cluster. We have these controllers in active standby mode. If the active controller goes down, you can go to the standby controller and get all the information about all the chains, or if you want to configure new chain. So that's why we typically recommend a pair of controller, and the HA mode that we support is active standby.
And since you're hitless in the case that the switches go headless, then there's no hit to fail over or fail back from controllers either.
Yes.
What's your typical customer that's deploying this? What sort of environment are they? Are they enterprise? Or are they service provider? Or where are you seeing the uptake?
Yeah, mostly enterprise customers that we are seeing, but we are also seeing interest from the service providers now. Mostly, I would say, is enterprise.
And I would imagine it's going to be enterprises. I mean, whenever I think of service chaining, it's really about layering lots of security tools on one another. So I'm imagining it's going to be enterprises that have a significant tilt towards security, right? Financials and healthcare.
Financial, healthcare, energy, automakers. Right. Universities, we have seen a lot of universities, software vendors, enterprise software vendors. So, yeah. Typically, if you have more than one tool, that is where our product becomes more interesting, when you have to chain. And we are seeing people are deploying more and more tools these days because just the number of threats are increasing.
And the security guys need something to keep themselves busy, right?
Yeah. Yes. So the best part is of this architecture is this, we are decoupling the security admins and network admins. If you have to now add more, let's say, a new tool. So big chain switch and the tools are owned by the security guys. All the production ports and boxes are owned by the networking guys. So anytime you have to add any new tool or do any changes in your security layer, you don't need to interfere with the networking. I mean, if you don't need to file a ticket to a networking admin saying, hey, now I need to change something on your networking, change some configuration on your networking boxes, things like that. It's only when you have to add new chains or things like that, that's when the networking folks get involved. But let's say you want to schedule a maintenance for some tools, or you want to upgrade a tool, or you want to decommission a tool. You don't need to involve any networking admin. So that's what our customers really like. It's the decoupling of the networking team and the security team.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think that's actually a key distinction there, is that ability to decouple those dependencies on one another. Although as the network guy, that means I could walk in tomorrow and suddenly the traffic that was only going through a firewall yesterday is now going through an SSL decryptor, a firewall, and an IDS. And no one told me, right? guess where the call comes when it all breaks.
Well, do you care?
Well, I care when it's broken.
As long as the networking guys are getting their traffic, they wouldn't care like how whether it's going through like a lot of...
Yeah, but our phone always rings first, and then we have to call the security guys once we figure out what they did to us, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always the network.
Yeah, it's always the network. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
By the way, when we were chatting before this podcast, you mentioned that DMZ is just one of the ways people are using this product.
Yeah.
So what are the other ideas?
There's a concept called Science DMZ, which is mostly in the university environments, where they have whitelisted some set of traffic, and these traffic are huge. They are like elephant flows. If you have already whitelisted certain traffic, then they keep adding to that whitelist. You don't want to send it to firewall because your firewall capacities are limited. So you want only traffic which you're not sure you would want to send it through firewall. So that's use case is picking up a lot in the university environment where they have like huge file transfer or huge flows which are already whitelisted. So it's called Science DMZ. And that's another use case where our university customers are using this product for. The one other use case is as a smart tap device. Because we support ACL-based span on these. So you can say, hey, I want to only span a certain subset of traffic, only for this subnet or only for this protocol, I want to span the traffic. So you can span it and you can give it to offline tools. So spanning will create a copy and give it to the span port. You can give it to an offline tool for analysis, or you can also give it to BMF, Big Monitoring Fabric, which can send it to the tools. We do support remote spans and ER spans. So folks can use it as a smart tap. Typically, layer one taps are you get all the traffic all the time. Whereas in this particular case, you can do ACL base and you can do remote span. So that's another smart tap is another use case. One more use case is a smart patch panel. If you don't have any tools and you have these external ports, you can just use it as a patch panel because it's a horizontally scalable architecture. You can keep adding more and more switches and you connect to these external ports. And then you can say, hey, I want a patch between this port and this port. Or then you change your mind and you want a patch between some different set of ports. So these are the different use cases of these products.
That sounds great. I'll take two for my home lab.
Sure.
Yeah, that was exactly what I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
Where would you use a patch panel outside of a lab environment?
Mostly our customers have been using the patch panel in the lab environment.
Yeah, and it's so much nicer than what I had to do on Cisco switches years
ago. Yeah, because traditionally, a lot of guys have tried to do patch panel using layer 2 learning and this and that. I mean, it just complicates things. Here, it's a very simple solution.
Yeah, and LACP doesn't go through and CDP doesn't go through.
Yeah. You want to just treat it this as a wire. I mean, that's our design philosophy for this product.
Is there any integration between BigChain and Big Cloud Fabric?
In the Big Cloud Fabric, you can do service insertion. What you can say is these are my service ports. And these service ports then can be actually the production ports on the BigChain device where you can then connect multiple tools on the BigChain. So you can actually have both Big Cloud Fabric and BigChain deployed in your network.
Okay. But they are essentially independent products?
They are independent products right now. Yes.
Okay.
Now, if someone got excited in the last hour or so and wants to test drive this, how can he do that?
They can go to our website, www.bigswitch.com, and find more information about this product. We also have on our main website a link to online labs. We call it, it's labs.bigswitch.com, where they can get a feel for the product. They can play around. They can create chains. They can insert tools, send traffic, see how it behaves. They can get a feel for our slick GUI that we have. You can also use CLI. So you can use BSN Labs to do this. Or you can contact our sales and we can help you set up a POC in your environment. If you want in your DMZ, or if you have a lab simulating your DMZ, we can set up a POC in your environment.
So I can play with your boxes in your lab, or if I have some white box switches, then your guys would come along and help me set this up in my environment.
Let me clarify that. So for the Big Switch Labs, it's essentially a virtual environment that we spin up. We have virtual switches and a virtual controller and virtual traffic generators. There's a nice little tutorial that walks you through all of the different features and how to use them through the GUI or the CLI. So it gives you kind of what the user experience is like. With regard to going on-site or doing a physical POC, we can provide all of the pieces that you need in order to do a POC, including the physical switches. Typically for POCs, people run the controllers in VMs. As well, you know, if you get through the POC process and you like the product, we can also sell you the entire thing as a complete product, or else you can buy it through one of our partners, including Dell, who can sell you both the open networking switches, which are actually the same switches that they use to run their FTOS operating system. And in addition, they can sell you any or all of our products, including BigChain.
If I remember correctly, out of the major networking vendors, Dell is the only one that sells you, in double quotes, Brightbox switches, right?
Yes, for now.
Okay. I would say that they're the ones who are the most committed to it at this point.
But you can also, if not Dell, if you want Acton or Quanta. So there, we have an extensive HCL list of the switches that we support. So you can pick any switch from that HCL list.
For those of us that don't want to go look at the HCL right this moment, is there a specific generation of the Broadcom chipsets that you're dependent on to provide the big chain functionality, or is it any, you know, Trident 2?
So we are doing Trident 2, Trident 2 Plus, and Tomahawk right now. Okay. In future, maybe Trident 3 and so on. So we are just riding the technology curve over there. It's basically the economics of the open networking switches and the technology curve, correct? Like the more speeds and feeds, they come up with a newer ASIC. We just port our software on it, qualify it, and it makes it to our HCL list. That's why we have a lot of advantage when we are not developing our own proprietary hardware as compared to the competition. So,
and I assume you do sort of the complete end-to-end support model for this as well, like you do your other products. Okay.
Yes, you can buy everything from us. We can give you full support. We have so-called one throat to choke.
The only thing that continues to come to mind to me is thinking about, especially if you're reusing the tools, which assumably one of the big reasons you would deploy a solution like this is that you can reuse your tools efficiently in lots of different ways. I see that causing the complexity of the configuration of the tools themselves to increase significantly. I was just wondering what your experience has been with that. Is that something that's been a struggle for customers implementing this kind of complex service chaining, or am I overblowing that in my head?
No, so what happens is the configuration you are doing, so from a tool perspective, the configuration doesn't change much because you are just saying, hey, this is my input port where you'll get the traffic. You scrub the traffic based on what kind of tool you are using and send it out on this output port, correct? That configuration remains the same on the tool. Now, what traffic that goes to the tool will be decided by the big chain switch. So the configuration actually you are doing is on the big chain switch. So the tool configuration does not get complicated. And even if you're sharing, it is just a tag that goes with the packet. And it goes through its scrubbing process. Tool may decide to drop it, whatever tool decides. And then the packet comes back. Only expectation when you are sharing the tools is we want the tools to retain the tag. And then when it comes back, then we know how to do the forwarding. So the configuration of the tool does not change much. It is what you configure on the big chain side, saying, hey, I want to optimize my tools. I want to send only relevant traffic. And that is also an optional thing. You can always send all the traffic to these tools.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about it from the perspective of sort of the same idea as VM sprawl, right? A generation ago or a lifetime ago when virtualization took off, right? Suddenly that built-in throttle against just spinning up new stuff all the time went away. And so the result was we get lots and lots of VMs for, you know, every little purpose. I'm just thinking to myself that probably a key element to successful deployment of a product like this is maintaining some degree of discipline and not having, you know, what I guess you might term service sprawl, where suddenly you are just literally inserting every possible tool in every possible workflow in a different way.
Bob, in this case, the tools are so expensive that you would I mean, it's if you want to buy a good firewall or a good DDoS or some device, these tools are expensive. The ports are expensive. So you wouldn't sprawl them. Like VMs were kind of almost free. Yes, you had to pay some VM tax, but mostly it's free. But these tools are... Like especially when you have to buy these physical tools, they get really expensive. So,
well, right, but now I can create, instead of having to think carefully about the way my application flows through a particular set of tools, right, that may mm-hmm. maybe I only have the opportunity to set up one or two of those. Now, in theory, I could make 87 different pathways through 12 different tools, but that's going to result in a lot of configuration sprawl within those tools because now I'm going to have to create essentially, you know, I guess, VLAN sub-interfaces for inputs and outputs of each of those things with separate policies. And I guess I'm thinking of particular security administrators I know of and thinking about how that could get out of hand.
No, so from a tool perspective, you don't need to configure all the VLANs and this. I mean, you are just saying this is your input and this is your output, where this is the input where your traffic will come, do whatever scrubbing that you need to do, and send it out on this port. You don't need to configure like layer 2 configuration on these tools.
You said you were using VLAN tags just to tag that traffic, I assumed that indicated that you would be sending multiple chains traffic that is separated via VLAN tags to the same port, right?
Yes. But it's essentially, I mean, we are just sending it, and that VLAN tag is used by big chain switch when it comes back. It's not being used by the tools. The purpose of the VLAN tag is we want to identify, okay, which production port the traffic came in on, read, and once it comes back from the tool port, we know, okay, where to send out, which is the southbound port that we need to send this traffic on. So the tagging mechanism is used by the big chain. For tool, this is just another packet with VLAN tag. They don't need to...
I was going to say, but then the tool's got to be, it's got to be aware of the VLAN tag, right? It's going to interpret that VLAN tag.
Yeah, you have to configure the VLAN interfaces on the tools. Otherwise, the tool will go like, no.
Right.
Yeah, so you can just say it belongs to all the VLANs. So for example, our customers have used this tool sharing. Typically, the way they set up the tools is they just say, hey, ignore the VLAN, correct? On whatever VLAN comes, just ignore it on that interface. You don't care about the VLAN. You just do your service, because these tools, depending how you configure these tools, correct? So these different tools have different ways of configuring layer 2 information on the interface level. They just say, ignore the VLAN, send the traffic through the scrubbing module and send it out.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So let's wrap this up. Sandeep, Andy, thanks a lot for this really exhaustive deep dive into Big Chain. If people get follow-up questions after listening to this, where can they reach you?
I'm not on any social media to any serious degree, but if people have questions, they can send them via email to me at Shaw, S-H-A-W, at bigswitch.com.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, or they can also send me an email at sandeep.shaw@bigswitch.com. Or they can send an email to a generic alias, which is info@bigswitch.com. Also, they can come to our website and try out the BSN labs. I think that would be the best way to get started.
I've done some of those labs in the past for your Big Cloud Fabric product, and those labs are really great. So,
Cool. Thanks.
Glad to hear you guys are continuing to develop those. I think those are very helpful.
And Bob, where can people find you?
Well, you can always find me on Twitter, at Bob McCouch. I'm on there once in a blue moon. And I do still, let's say I still own a blog, even if I don't seem to have the time to update it anymore. And that's at herdingpackets.net, of course.
Thank you. And I'm Ivan Pepelnyak, and you've been listening to Software Gone Wild, the software-focused podcast dealing with all things software-defined. And if you want to know more about SDN, just go to sdn.ipspace.net, where you'll find link to other episodes of this podcast, the SDN-related blog posts I write, webinars, books, presentations, videos, you name it. And don't forget, we've been talking about SDN today, but in reality, there are switches below this solution, so it all runs on hardware.